Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Enlightened Networking's 30-Minute of Wisdom Call for Friday, January 27th. This is Gregory Mascari from Bozeman, Montana, and I want to thank everyone for joining us here on our live call or on the replay. Robin and I started these regular weekly calls kind of as our way of paying it back, or I guess in some regards really paying it forward for all the amazing people we've been blessed to meet, the wisdom we've learned over the years and really over the decades. And it's our intention with these Friday morning 30-minute of wisdom calls to create a safe space where people from all professions, backgrounds, and companies can come together and learn from some of the most forward-thinking authors, speakers, trainers, and really enlightened beings in the world today. So at this time, I'd like to turn our 30-minute of wisdom call over to my partner in life and enlightened networker, Robin Blank Mascari.
Well, thank you, Gregory, and good morning, everyone, or good day whenever you're listening to this call. Today's topic is Smart Trust, and that's the title of the book, and the subtitle is Creating Prosperity, Energy, and Joy in a Low-Trust World. And if you do the surveys, it's pretty serious. 9 out of 10 people think it is a low-trust world, or actually it's probably greater than that, and we'll hear more about that in a minute. And trust is the one thing that can change everything. Our guest today is the co-founder of Covey Link, the co-founder of the Global Speed of Trust Practice and former Covey Leadership, Franklin Covey Executive. This man is truly a genius, and he led the strategy that propelled the Seven Habits books to be the Seven Habit book and then following books to be one of the most, influential books of the 20th century. And it's fascinating because after 22 years, it's still on the bestseller list in many countries. Truly a publishing phenomena. And this man is partners with Stephen M. R. Covey, that's Stephen's senior son, who led the organization for many, many years, totally exploded it, and wrote the international bestseller, The Speed of Trust. They have a brand new book, and that's what we're going to talk about today, Smart Trust. It's already on the top of the charts. Interesting, back in 1988, I answered a blind ad in a San Diego newspaper. And I went for an interview, and immediately when I met this man, I wanted to work with him. It was like this instant yes, and such great energy and a bright light. Little did I know what the future would bring. But together with a few others in our small little office, we got to enroll people in an executive development program with some of the top business experts at our time. And his talents were so widely recognized by home organization, he was invited to move to Utah to truly launch the Seven Habits book. And as we all know, the rest is history. So I got to personally witness and even participate with the brilliance of developing an unknown author, Stephen Covey, into a worldwide phenomena. So this today, I want to really give a warm welcome to Greg Link. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Robin. It's great to be with you. And it was 1987, just FYI.
It was 87.
We're older than we think.
Thanks for the reminder. Oh, my goodness. And it was a grassroots movement, what you did with Seven Habits. And I remember Simon & Schuster said they have never in their history seen a book marketed the way you did it. You developed this grassroots movement that created this international movement. So I love having you with us, and I want to jump into our talk on trust because, you know, it's one of those things, and I love that quote from Warren Buffett. What did he say?
Well, he said a lot of things, but
I
think the
trust.
One you're referring to from yesterday is that trust is like the air we breathe. If trust is absent, nobody notices it until it's gone, and then it's painfully evident when you don't have trust.
So let's jump in.
And that's a paraphrase. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but I thought it would come better from you.
That's okay.
You know, when Larry King said, you know, in your book jacket, he says, from all the people I've interviewed, I've learned that trust is everything. You know, it's the one thing that changes everything. Could you talk about that? Because, you know, it's something we take for granted, and then when we don't have it, it's really serious.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, Robin, because Stephen and I have had the privilege and honor to interact with some of the smartest business leaders and government leaders around the world over this last 25 years. And as we engaged them and talked about leadership and coached them and advised them on leadership, and they advised us, we learned a lot from the people that we worked with, obviously. But at the same time, we kept trying to figure out what it is that made the difference. And the common thread that seemed to go through all the different stories and situations in business and in government where there was an extraordinary level of success, it seemed to be this common thread of trust kept coming up. And that's one of the ways that people describe the benefits of the seven habits, is that it engenders greater trust and it helps you be more trustworthy. And so we've kind of come to that realization. And then as we started to focus on it and put language to it, because many of the people that we interviewed didn't necessarily use the word trust, but as you start to educate yourself around some of the implications of trust, it really is the common denominator of success and failure. We found that that's been reinforced. We've identified 13 behaviors of high-trust people around the world and continued to drill down and interview people and do research, and it really does hold up. And it's certainly something also that we generated this from our own experience. That's one of the things that prompted it, was our own personal experiences with trust, that it was really a generator of success, because it's the root of all business. It's the root of the economy.
And you know, it's interesting when you talk about it, there are characteristics, and some people think it's a soft skill, but it's truly a skill that we can all develop. And it can, you know, when you get down to it, it's one of the most leveraged, important things we can do, not just in business, but in our personal life. So would you be willing to share some of those characteristics? Because these are things that, as we're more aware, we can actually work on and develop that skill.
Sure. One of the things that you mentioned, skill, that's probably one of the starting points, is that you've got to recognize, and we finally recognized, that trust isn't just some nice-to-have soft social virtue. It is a hard economic driver, and it is, in fact, a skill. It is something you can get better at. And by the nature of the success that many of the listeners to your calls have already had in their careers, I know that many of them are already either consciously or unconsciously competent as it relates to trust. But in this new global economy, this is the number one leadership skill. We've come to be convinced it's the number one leadership skill that you can engender and get better at, and to teach your people. If you're trying to influence others and grow an organization, it's the best thing you can teach others. And many leaders throughout history, you see them interviewed in Fortune magazine or in some other setting, and they're asked, well, what led to your success? Most of them are guessing. You know, you go down the road and things, one thing leads to another, and they try to formulate some reason for it. But it's really important. One of the things that they constantly bring up is that I was able to be trusted or build a trusted brand, and so they mention it, but they don't really know the components. And so the key to understanding the skill is to understand the components. What are some of the underlying factors? And in Smart Trust, we've identified five actions that are common to high trust companies and people all over the world. And this book is interesting, Robin, because after the success of Speed of Trust, which sold over 1 million copies around the world already, which gave us the confidence that there was really something to this and that people were resonating with it. But we started to look during the recession, when everything, the wheels came off, we started to look at some of the outliers of success, because there were organizations that were succeeding in spite of the economic circumstances. One of the examples we give in the book is Zappos. People are familiar with Tony Hsieh, who wrote Delivering Happiness. And Tony, when I spoke to him in preparing for this book, I asked him why he was able to be so successful. And here's the level of success. He went from zero to a $1 billion company in the worst economic decade in history. And as he articulated to me, he said he did it by extending trust, first to his employees and then to his customers. And for those that don't know the business model, he sold women's shoes online and allowed women to exchange them for free shipping both ways, to exchange the shoes, and grew a $1 billion business. Very counterintuitive. but he did it in the worst economic time in history. And there's myriad of other examples in the book, but the five actions that you're asking about that we specifically identified that are common to these organizations, the first thing is they need to believe and trust. They need to believe that it's possible, that it's a better way to live and a better way to lead, and to have that underlying paradigm from which to behave. And that's the first thing. And not everybody does believe in it. You know, a lot of people believe in control and don't believe that trust works, et cetera. So that's the first thing to do, is to examine your paradigm and try to discover if, in fact, you do have that core belief, that you really do believe that trust is a better way to live and to lead. And then that leads to the second action. And this is something we are repeatedly, you know, encouraging people to do, and that's to start with yourself. You know, you've really got to look to yourself. We all, you know, the minute you think the problem's out there, as Dr. Covey says, that very thought is the problem. And we have a tendency to want to blame the circumstances and blame others. And so if we start with ourself and develop our own core trust and self-trust and take responsibility, examine our own motives, it really does make a big difference. Are we really, what are our intentions? Do we really desire to, in an engagement with another person, desire both people to benefit, for both people to win or not? Or are we trying to maneuver or manipulate or gain some advantage in the conversation? And so by starting with ourselves, that gives us a ground. And these leaders tend to do that. They take responsibility first. And then the third smart trust action, and this is the one where we have found the most enthusiasm on our own part, because we feel that as we discovered it really started to examine our own experience, we found that this really is a game changer, and that is to declare your intent, to be transparent, to put forth your agenda. Because otherwise, if you don't do this, Robin, what happens when you're trying to converse with someone or present something in your business, they're back on their heels wondering, now, where is she going with this? You know, what's he up to? Where is this leading to? What are they trying to accomplish? What are they not saying? But by declaring your intent, you take that sword out of their hand, right out of the gate. You describe to them exactly what your agenda is, what you're trying to accomplish, and invite them to engage in a dialogue with you. It changes the entire nature of every relationship and every conversation that you have. And then there's another part to that, and that is assuming positive intent in others. You'll like this story, Robin. My sweet wife, Annie, when I drive, I'm convinced that when people pull out in front of me, that they looked me right in the eyes and they did it deliberately, that was their intent. And Annie likes to remind me that maybe that wasn't really their intent. Maybe they didn't even see me. Maybe they had something else on their mind, or they have a sick child or a sick pet and they're in a hurry. So there are other possibilities. And this whole idea of assuming positive intent is the genesis of eBay, which was a huge success in networking around the world. Kind of another one of those odd business models, assuming that people could be trusted. And Pierre Omidyar, when he was asked what was the key to eBay, he says, well, or what was the insight that he gained in eBay, he says it's the fact that 135 million strangers could trust each other. And wow. Meg Whitman, when she was interviewed after she was the CEO of eBay for a while, she said that the magic about eBay was that Pierre believed that people were basically good. That was the premise. That's what gave him the courage to assume that these people could be trusted. So assuming positive intent in others, rather than, and particularly in a low trust world, as you mentioned, Robin, the world, the environment we're in right now, everybody kind of assumes that they've got to watch out, you know, that everybody's out to take advantage of them. And so we get this cynical mindset and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, you can flip that on its head by assuming positive intent in others. If you're an employer and have employees, you can assume that you hired them for a good reason, and you can assume that they have the organization's best interest at heart. In a relationship, if you're in a relationship, you can assume that the other party has your best interest in heart as you do theirs. And that changes the tone of the interaction. As a matter of fact, Indra Nooyi, who wrote the foreword to this book, she's the CEO and chairman of PepsiCo. She said one of the most important lessons she learned, and she learned it from her father, was to assume positive intents in others. And that's one of my favorite stories in the book. And then the next one, number four, which is very, you know, intuitive. We all kind of know this, but it's not the way we behave. And that is to do what you say you're going to do. The leaders that are leading out and having these extraordinary results can be counted on. They do what they say they're going to do. As a matter of fact, we interviewed a multinational CEO who did business in over 100 countries, and he said that trust was prominent in all the different cultures, as we have discovered. It's a basic principle of life, but it's expressed in different cultures a little bit differently. But the one thing that he found in their organization that was common in all these different countries is that they could know that people that did what they said they were going to do could be counted on. So that was a cultural expectation around the world, and that was a way to tell the people that you could count on, is do they do what they say they're going to do. And then lastly, you know, is to lead out in extending trust to others. You can't grow an organization, you can't grow your influence unless you lead out. Leader needs to go first. You need to start with yourself, you need to lead out, you need to set the example, you need to behave in ways that engender trust and extend trust to others, which is very difficult. We've been conditioned to be control freaks and to you know, manage risk by keeping control, and there is risk in trusting, and that's really the genesis of the book, is the fact that it is a skill, and smart trust is that skill that allows you to extend trust to others. With that, Robin, I'll leave it back to you. That's the basic five actions that are common to all these people, and these are things that many of your listeners are already good at, but we can all get better at, and we can teach it explicitly to those that we're trying to influence.
Oh, wow, and thank you. And I'm watching myself, because this book is filled with great stories, and I think they just so vividly express the power and the shifts that can happen. And going back to number one, you know, and relating it to Seven Habits, because so many people are so familiar with Seven Habits, you know, Stephen always talks, starts out with the paradigm. We've got to have that paradigm and be aware. So choosing to believe in trust and examining where are we with that, because a lot of people step out in the world not even realizing they don't. But, you know, I'd love you to go a little bit further into starting with self, because I'm thinking of the emotional bank account. And I remember back to Professor Stephen Senior talking about the emotional bank account with ourselves. And can you talk a little bit more about how we can develop that and increase that trust with self through the emotional bank account, and how we can use that?
Sure, I can. It really does start with yourself, your own beliefs. It's one thing to believe and trust, but you've also got to examine your motives and decide why you're doing it, and are you doing it? And the deposits in your own emotional bank account on a personal level are, can you be counted on? If you set your alarm, do you get up? If you set a goal, do you hit it? If you you're trying to work on a behavior or correct something in your language, do you stay with it? Do you follow through? So that you can count on yourselves, you can count on your own motives. You know that you basically want everybody else to win. You have a good motive, because that you cannot lie with the same intensity that you can tell the truth. And if you're telling lies to yourself, it really does change everything. But if you have tremendous confidence, one of the ways to define trust is confidence. As a matter of fact, many of the romance language, the word for trust is confidence. And having self-confidence, knowing that your motives are pure, that you can be counted on, that really goes a long way in convincing others. You've got to kind of first believe in yourself. And so that is really a starting point. You've got to have a high emotional bank account with yourself and self-confidence before you can really reach out and extend that to others.
You know, it's so interesting listening to you. And I'm just watching my mind taking me back to when I first started studying Seven Habits, making and keeping promises to self. And
yep.
extending that, you know, watching how we do make goals and we don't keep them and we, oh, no one will notice. But truly, that trust in self is the making and keeping promises to self. And then, you know, when we have a low trust with other people, and we talked about this the other day, there are certain things we think we can do to build trust or rebuild trust, and sometimes they're counterproductive. So could you share a little bit about that? Because I think people really... We know when we have a low trust relationship, what are some things we can do to rebuild that bank account, rebuild some of that trust?
Well, you know, obviously we are advocates of the fact that you can, in fact, rebuild trust no matter what. There are some extreme instances when you may never trust somebody again. It's been such a terrible violation that you're not going to forgive them. But in most cases, you can rebuild trust. And it starts out by first taking responsibility again and righting whatever wrongs or whatever your part was. And we have a tendency to blame or to judge others. You know, we judge ourselves by our intentions. We judge others by their behavior. So when there's a break of trust, we have a tendency to be self-righteous about it and try to find that one part. And then we try to apologize, and then we say, but, you know, or and, you know, we're just, our psyche wants to be right. And so the first key to rebuilding trust, again, is to believe that you can and be willing to, and to subordinate whatever agenda or whatever feelings you have to really try to rebuild the trust in the relationship. And again, it gets back to your behaviors and behave in ways consistent. First of all, declare your intent. Let the other person know you're hoping to rebuild or regain their trust, and to ask perhaps what are some things that you could do to regain their trust, and to be just open and explicit about it. And over time, again, getting back to doing what you say you're going to do, as you follow through, you can, in fact, regain trust in most cases.
I love it. And, it's interesting. I didn't realize I'd be going back to my seven habits filter and paradigm so much, but one of the keys is, you know, good old habit five. The key to being influential is to allow ourselves to be influenced first and learning how to listen. And I remember we used to tell people, you know, I'm working on my listening, so I may be a little awkward. Please help me. And that, you know, really expressing it openly when our behavior changes, people can go, what happened to them? But if we do declare it and let people know, and then with that pure intent, it can make a huge difference. So, you know, you talked about 13 characteristics and, you know, the five specific directions to go. What are some of the other characteristics as we're really developing this skill?
Well, as we're developing the skill, and this is out of our previous book, The Speed of Trust and the 13 Behaviors of High Trust People, and, you know, they're common sense. One of them is to listen first, and so it really does make intuitive sense. And interesting, speaking about listening, that is habit five. I've been working on it for 25 years.
Aren't we
so
all?
It really is a difficult one. Another behavior that engenders trust is talking straight, being straightforward, you know, saying what you mean and not beating around the bush, demonstrating respect. You know, and being respectful of the other person, recognizing that even if you disagree with this person, you want to agree to disagree agreeably and to be respectful about the fact, the right of the other person to see it differently. And really, that's the key to innovation and synergy in businesses, is to invite different opinions. And that's one of the faults of a lot of leaders. They're so dogmatic that they create a fear-based culture where people are afraid to express their ideas. And quite frankly, the fact that somebody can see it differently, can think out of the box, is the very key to innovation. One of the 13 behaviors that you exemplify in the calls that you're doing is getting better, recognizing that we can all get better. We've all had success, et cetera, but it's easy to rest on our laurels and assume that we're already an expert in our field. Well, the game is changing, and one of the most important things that people can do in this day and age is to get better, to recognize that they need to get better at trust, to build trust as a skill. Because it is if you have the ability to engender trust in a low trust world, it gives you a tremendous competitive advantage. people that are trusted get the best jobs. They're the first to be hired. They're the first to be promoted. They're the last to be laid off. They get the biggest budgets. They get the most responsibility. All sorts of good things happen to people that are trusted. And the same thing translates to companies, Robin. The research shows that high-trust organizations are three times more profitable than low-trust organizations. And so, you know, that's a pretty significant variable. You know, we also talk about talent. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are involved in trying to recruit people or attract talent, and talent is attracted to high-trust people and to high-trust organizations. So there's a lot of reasons why getting better at dealing with trust is important. One of the other key behaviors is clarifying expectations. Most breakdowns, our friend Blaine Lee, Dr. Blaine Lee, used to say that most difficulties in relationships come from differences in expectations, violating somebody's expectations. So clarifying expectations, making sure you're both on the same page, is a key way to build trust. And then, of course, holding each other accountable, holding yourself and the other person accountable to those expectations. And we've talked already about, you mentioned keeping commitments, doing what you say you're going to do. We've talked about extending trust. Another one is righting wrongs, which is important. A lot of times we may, you know, quickly apologize for something, but we don't really make restitution or make any attempt to right the wrong. And that's an important thing to restoring trust, to be not only own the responsibility for the breakdown, but if it was your responsibility, to try to make it right. And that goes a long, long way. So these behaviors, and again, I mentioned that we judge ourselves by our intentions and others by their behaviors. These behaviors are observable, and they are really the components to trust, and they can be taught and they can be learned. And so as a team or an organization or a network develops this culture of high trust by behaving consistent and calling each other when they're inconsistent with these behaviors, you can really build a very dynamic organization very quickly.
Wow. Well, we just have a little bit of time left, and I want to make sure that if there's anything else you want to say. And, you know, the Speed of Trust was a huge success. Why did you guys write Smart Trust?
Well, one of the things that we found, we had people coming up to us, Robin, saying, you know, can this really work? I mean, come on. I work in this company that is just so dysfunctional. This can't be possible. Or we'd have people in other countries say, you know, this is a corrupt society. They're bribing each other. There's no way this can work in my country. Matter of fact, one of my favorite stories in the book is about Colombia. We don't have time to talk about it right now, but it's how an entire country got turned around. And so the principles do work. And so as far as a concluding remark, I would say let's talk just briefly about the fact that we are not talking about blind trust. You know, that's why the title of the book is Smart Trust. We're talking about having a propensity to trust, having a desire to trust, starting with that starting point of assuming other people can be good, and yet tempering that with the analysis, and to be careful and to do your due diligence. And the balance between the propensity to trust, the starting point of hoping that you can trust people and assuming positive intent, balanced by the analysis, that's when you get this judgment skill, the ability to make the judgment call, which we call smart trust, which is the ideal outcome. And if it is a skill you can get good at, and when you get good at it, you can hire better, you can perform better, you can communicate better, you'll find a lot of good things happen once you gain this skill, because we do live in a very dangerous time right now where people are desperate, they're trying to take advantage of others, et cetera. So having the skill, the ability to have this judgment call of smart trust is a real survival skill. And as I mentioned before, it's a unique competitive advantage in this low-trust world to be able to have the skill of exercising smart trust.
Wow. And, you know, we talk about it at all levels and, you know, starting with our own home and our most important relationships and, you know, raising our children in that kind of environment that they're trusted leads to them having that paradigm, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. One of the greatest experiments in the world is to apply these principles to raising teenagers.
Teenagers, yay. Well, Greg, Thank you. It's just been a joy, a delight. I just love that we're reconnected. We've gone lots of different ways, and you've created a huge wave in your wake that has impacted millions and millions of people. And a lot of people don't even know who you are, and now they're going to know, at least some of them. And I want to thank everyone for being with us today. What we'll do is complete a recorded session. Greg has agreed to stay on for a little bit of time for Q&A. Next week we have, you know, I quote Stephen Senior every time I do a talk, whether it's 5 minutes, an hour, a week, the deepest need of the human soul is to be appreciated, acknowledged, affirmed, and understood. It's one of those things that can build trust. And next week, we have the master of acknowledgement coming on with us. And, Greg, you know her, the Blue Ribbon Lady, Helise Bridges. Yes. She'll be with us, you know. And we have a lot of familiar friends and common friends and people that are doing fabulous work in the world. And since all those years that you met Helise, she's gone on to affect the planet also in brilliant ways. So we have Helise with us next week. And again, thank you for taking time out to be with us and sharing your 30 minutes of wisdom. And the book is called Smart Trust. The website is smarttrustbook.com, and there's all kinds of great resources there. The stories in here are literally life-changing, and it is the one thing that can make the biggest difference in everything. So thank you again, everyone, for being with us. And at this time, we'll complete our recording. Gregory, any final comments?
Nope.
Well,
I'm good. Sorry.
Oh, two Gregs.
Go ahead,
on
Gregory.
The phone.
Greg and Gregory. So yeah, yeah. I
forgot about that.
Usually I get called I get called Gregory when I'm in trouble. So go ahead, Gregory.
Yeah, that's what our moms call us, right?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you, thank you. What a breath of fresh air your message is, because you know, to assume positive intent is just a way of life, and your delineation there at the end, the difference between smart trust and blind trust, is brilliant. You know, because certainly we've all, you know, given trust, and been burnt, or, you know, or had a little pain. But I think overall, the scoreboard, we're way ahead by learning the art of smart trust. So thank you, thank you, thank you. It's certainly
my pleasure.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, so we'll complete our recording at this time. Hold, stand by, please.